This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage of the trial of Scott Peterson, the Parkland School Resource Officer. Let's go to the courtroom for segment number three of today.
Okay, I'm going to go back on the record. This is State versus Scott Peterson, 19-7166 CF10A. I have Ms. Gomes, Mr. Killer, and Mr. Klinger present with the state. I have Mr. Igarsh present with Mr. Peterson, who likewise is present. We are outside the presence of the jury. The state having rested their case, any motions on behalf of the defendant, Mr. Igarsh, go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. First, we would renew all motions made throughout this trial, including the ones made during jury selection and throughout the state's case. And we would be moving for a judgment of acquittal on all 11 counts. The court knows each and every element. I don't have to go through them. The court heard the testimony in this case, and we do not believe that the state met their burden as required by law.
Okay. State, your response, if any.
Your Honor, I think the court law has the standard and the light most favorable evidence. Looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state has put forward considerable evidence to the jury to allow them to go back and apply that to the law the court gives them and the all counts of the information.
So, Mr. Klinger, let me ask you this. When does the defendant become a caregiver? When does the defendant become a caregiver for the listed victims in counts 1 through 10, or 1 through 7?
Well, when does he become the caregiver? He becomes a caregiver once he becomes the SRO of the school. But if you want individual to those...
Well, he's not charged with anything as it relates to the victims on the first floor, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so I presume that means at some point you determine, or the state has determined he's not a caregiver that has criminal liability for what takes place on the first floor.
Oh,
but you're telling me he does have criminal liability for what takes place on the third floor. So my question is, when does he become a caregiver to the people on the third floor?
The reason he wasn't charged with anyone on the first floor is because he couldn't have gotten there in time to help him in any way. So we decided, since he was still on his way to the scene, not to charge him with the first floor, that we could only charge him with what happened after he arrived, which is about the time that the shooters were killing bikes. So
you're saying as a caregiver for everyone, but I'm looking at the first element as to neglect of a child, 827.03. You're saying the first element doesn't apply to anyone on the first floor because it's nothing that he did or failed to do that would have changed anything that happened on the first floor. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, exactly. We didn't feel that because he wasn't even there yet, couldn't be gotten there any faster that wouldn't have been fair to have charged him with those. And that was a filing decision that was made at the very beginning.
So he's a caregiver for everybody?
Yes.
All the 4,000 students at the school?
Yes, sir.
And the 40 acres of the school grounds? Or whatever the size is?
Yes, he is.
In other words, every school resource officer, the state's position is every school resource officer is a caregiver for every student at every public school upon setting foot on the campus.
The school that he's contracted to,
right.
He is the SRO. That's the special relationship that you see from the contract, and you see in the various training that he has, that he has a special relationship with the students, faculty, and administrators of the school, because he takes on that role, and it's a contractual role that's set, and we put all those documents into evidence. You see he has special powers, SROs, right? They can detain students. They can search without probable cause. They're given all these various extra rights that a patrolman on the street does not have, and even if that patrolman came into the school, he wouldn't have. But the SRO does. The SRO is given a different position, and he's operates under a different set, in some instances, under a different set of rules. So you do have a very special relationship between him and the school. What is he there for? He is there to protect the students. That's the whole point of it. And that's why he's the head of security. You should know the school inside and out, know the security system inside and out. He is there for the daily stuff that goes wrong, and then when, God forbid, things really go wrong, it doesn't matter. That's his position.
So let me ask you this then. Next.
Can I just add one other thing?
Sure.
We feel that at this point, that would be a decision for the jurors to make, the carrier decision. That's not, you made a legal decision back, way back a couple months, weeks ago about, or maybe it was even longer than that, about what statutes you were going to apply, caregiver. But for now, it's the state's position. We've given...
It's not my decision. I'm just looking at the standard instructions from the Florida Supreme Court. You charged them under 827.03, subsection 2B, and the Florida Supreme Court has promulgated standard jury instructions for 827.03, subsection 2B.
What was that number, Judge?
827.03, number 2, little b. And the third element is that the defendant was a caregiver for whichever alleged victim was.
Right.
I mean, that's a jury question, but I guess I'm trying to figure out, looking at like most favorable to the state, have you proven that with the evidence?
Well, also there was evidence of him being a mentor, one of the reasons behind the program. And I believe the case was cited to him for working on the motion to dismiss Brady. That's another role that they have, is being mentors to the students at the school. That's part of the program. So from the state's point of view, there was quite a bit of evidence that went in for the jurors to decide whether or not he has a caregiver position.
The second element, let's say you get over the caregiver hurdle, the second element as to counts 1 through 7 says in doing so, or at least in counts 1 through 6, the defendant caused great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement to the listed victim. Did Mr. Cruz do that?
All right, are you taking that to the jury instruction?
Yes, sir.
All right, are you referring to the
couple of... Element number 2 of neglect of a child, 16.5, is the defendant caused great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement to, and then you fill in the listed victim. So tell me what the evidence is that he caused great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement.
Well, that, Judge, I believe, if I've got you correct, that comes from it's in the jury instructions underneath the list of the four elements that need to be proven. And it's also in the statute that comes from the neglect itself can be based on repeated conduct or a single incident or omission that resulted in or reasonably could have been expected to result in serious physical, mental injury or a substantial risk of death to a child. It's all read together because that's the whole purpose of it, is that you did not supply, you did not give the care that you were supposed to do, and that resulted in the injury. So you, by your admission, by not doing what you were supposed to do...
So he caused it by failing to act. That's the state's theory.
I realize the word cause, you know, at times makes people maybe... pause for a second. But that is how the statute reads, and that is how it's read in paramutual, the other paragraphs in the statute itself, and it's in the jury instruction. That omission, at least in this case, we're talking about, it's not always an omission either here. We're not saying there's some things that were omitted, but there's also some things that he did that were not, that didn't do any good or weren't helpful. So he did do certain things and did do other things.
Yeah, I understand that, but in 827.03 it says a person who willfully or by culpable negligence neglects a child and in doing so causes great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. It's in the jury instruction as well, that he caused it. So the state's position is that the defendant caused these injuries? Or at least enough so to be held criminally responsible for them?
The defendant, it comes, yes, because it comes from the qualification that's there in the instructions and in 827.03 itself. The neglect was underneath number 3. neglect of a child may be based on repeated conduct or a single incident or omission that resulted in or reasonably could have been expected to result in serious physical or mental injury or a substantial risk of death to a child. So the conduct, right, and enables the killing to go on inside the building.
But instead of that, you would have to know that, right? The jury would have to be convinced through your evidence. Again, I'm supposed to look at the light most favorable to the state. The jury would have to be convinced that he knew there was someone in that building shooting people and that he failed to act or acted incorrectly. So his act or omission caused these injuries. He would have to know that that was happening, right?
You have to know that the injuries were happening or just the shooting was happening.
He would have to know that the danger existed. He would have to know that something's going on in that building.
Well, yeah, again, I think at this point you're touching on another issue that would be a factual issue for the jury to make a determination on, whether it does fit into the statute. I mean, we've laid out all the things that were done or not done during that time period.
Well, you, listen.
There's not, you see the five.
I don't get a vote, but let's say if I believe in a light most favorable to the state that you have proven that the defendant maybe didn't follow his training or act in the manner that was consistent with the training. But that's not what the jury's being asked to decide. They're being asked to decide, did he commit the crime of neglect of a child? And the crime of neglect of a child says that he caused the injury. So I guess that's the part that I'm stuck on. Well, how did he cause these injuries?
He caused the injury through his omission, his failure to do what he was supposed to do. He didn't do anything. He goes over and stays for 48 minutes in one spot. Instead of, as you heard some of the testimony today, open the door, check to see what's going on, talk to the students, go for the sound of the shots. It was all laid there, laid out the information, actually, the various points. Not speaking with the students, not going to the sound of the gunfire, not seeing out the shooter. There was a whole plethora of his stuff that he could have done that he didn't do. And that then forms the basis of the causation. It causes the killing to continue on because he isn't doing what he's supposed to be doing in caring for the child.
Okay. At this point, again, understanding we're not at the end of the trial, we're not at the end of the evidence, but at this point, I am to look at the evidence in a light most favorable to the state. I don't know what part of the evidence, witnesses, or testimony the jury's going to believe or not believe, but if they believe everything from the state's point of view, they certainly could believe that the elements of each crime have been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, or in fact, they may conclude that it hasn't been, but that would be their decision to make, at least at this point. So respectfully, the defense motion for judgment of acquittal is going to be denied as to all counts. Next, defense, do we have witnesses ready to go?
We did, Judge.
Okay. Anything you need me to address before we bring the jury back in?
No, Your Honor. Just note our objection to the court not granting this motion of judgment of acquittal. The court was struggling with it. Even in a light most favorable to the state, they did not meet the elements of the crime. And I don't believe that we should be continuing with these charges at this time.
Okay. State, anything you need me to address before we bring the jury back?
No.
Okay. So, Mr. Agarsal, please bring the jury back. We'll bring the jury back in. I'll welcome them back from the lunch break, explain to them that the state, having rested their case, we're now going to turn to the defense presentation, and I'm going to ask you to call your next witness.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Hey guys, we are
Thank you.
entering.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, once you're back in those seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you using your notepads, I'll give you a moment to get the notepads back out. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, when we took our lunch break, the state had rested their case. So at this point, we're now going to turn to the defense presentation. Mr. Igarsh, when you are ready, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The defense calls Suzanne Campbell. Suzanne Campbell.
Once you reach it, but before you have a seat, you can just stop and look at it. Raise your right hand. You swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Yes.
All right, please be seated. And once you are seated, if I can just scoot that chair all the way forward as far as it will go. Can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Suzanne Campbell. S-U-Z-A-N-N-E-C-A-M-E-L.
Mr. Igarsh, you may inquire.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Campbell.
Good afternoon.
Tell the jurors how you're feeling right now.
I'm nervous.
Have you ever
a little nauseous. But
nauseous, yeah. Have you ever testified in front of a jury before?
No.
I'll have you out of here as quick as possible. Tell us what you do for a living.
I'm a teacher still.
Okay.
I teach with Broward County still, through hospital in Brent.
And when did you start teaching? What year?
2003.
And were you a teacher on February 14th, 2018?
Yes.
Tell the jurors where you were a teacher.
At Stoneman Douglas.
And what building were you in?
My room was in the 700 building.
And where is the 700 building in relation to the 1200 building?
Well, it's like right across the little field.
Okay.
I guess they run parallel to each other.
And is it a far distance or a close distance? How would you characterize it?
It's pretty close, like maybe from here to the back of the room.
Okay. And when you walk out of your classroom, is that the building that you're staring at, the 1200 building?
Yes. Yeah, it's right in front of you when you walk.
And what do you teach? What's your expertise?
Math.
All layers of math?
Yes.
And I want to take you back to that day. And what were you doing prior to the fire alarm going off in the afternoon?
Well, I mean, we were having normal classes, and I was giving a test that day.
Okay, some type of math exam to your students?
Like a little, yeah.
And what happened while you were giving a math exam?
One of my students was out going to the bathroom, and...
Which student was that?
His name was Xavier, and we heard, like the whole class, everybody heard noise, and we didn't know what it was, so I thought immediately that maybe he was throwing something, or I don't know. I just went outside to see if I could see him, because he had gone to the bathroom, and maybe I thought maybe it was him, because he was outside for a little while before that happened. And so then I walked outside and I turned toward the bathroom area, because when you walk out, it's like an outdoor corridor, I guess.
Let me show you a photograph and just see if you're able to identify. Were you on the first floor or the second floor of the 7-1-1?
Second floor?
Okay. Let me show you what's been marked as defense exhibit. Let me show you some marks of Defense Exhibit E. Do you recognize what's contained in this photograph? Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. What are you looking at here?
Well, that's the 700 building.
Okay.
Behind that, I think, is the 1300.
Okay. Are you able to see where your classroom is located?
Right over there, that's the theater.
When you take a look at this photograph, I don't know if your classroom is contained.
Upstairs in the middle of, like by that tube.
Okay, can you just put your finger as close to it?
I mean, you can't see because of the cheese, but it's like right there. It's okay. In between those.
All right. So somewhere towards the middle of the 700 building?
Like right about there, yeah.
And then that building closest to you, is that the 1200 building?
This is, yes.
Okay. So you think that Xavier is the source of the noise that you're hearing, correct?
Well, at first, yeah, I didn't know what was going on, so I went out to try to see what was happening.
What did those noises sounded like at first when you were inside your classroom?
Loud bangs. None of us had any idea what was going on. It was just kind of got our attention.
And again, we're talking about before you go outside, right? Because you can hear additional shots, or you hear noises when you go outside, correct? All right. So is that a yes?
Yes.
Right. We're just talking about what you hear inside your classroom before you go outside. What did you think that those noises were? You said loud?
Well, it sounded a little bit like somebody lit firecrackers and threw them outside the door. That's what it sounded like at first.
Did it sound like these were contained within a building or outside?
No, it sounded like it was right outside. Like, I thought it was right outside my room. That's why I thought it maybe
okay.
It was my student.
Okay. And so you go outside to investigate. What happens next?
Well, there was no... It was pretty empty, actually. There was nobody there. So I turned toward the bathroom to see if I could see where Xavier went. And
Is this all from the second floor balcony where
yes.
You showed us?
Okay. Yes.
And then what do you do? What happens next?
Well, we started hearing loud noises, pops again, and I didn't know what it was. I just started looking around everywhere, and then he came running around the corner.
He is Xavier.
Correct? Xavier, and we just kind of looked at each other, and I said, like, what are you doing? And he said, it's not me. And we had like a quick minute to try to figure out what it was, and like, neither one of us, like, could quite figure out what was going on. It sounded almost like something was being, like, it sounded like fireworks being thrown at us is really what it sounded like. It almost sounded like something even hit the building where we were, but we didn't know. I yelled at him to get in the room. That was all before the fire alarm, though.
Okay. Could you tell whether the shots at you... Did there ever come a time when you thought that they were shots?
Well, yes. We were in the room for hours. Okay. We knew.
But you didn't know what they were when you were on the balcony, correct?
No.
And as best you thought, I think I heard you say you thought somebody was throwing fireworks at you, correct?
Yeah, it was incredibly loud, and you just couldn't figure out what was going on.
I want to freeze the moment when you're on the balcony and go back to your state of mind. Did you think that these firecracker noise, did you think that they were inside a building or outside of a building?
It was just so loud. Instinctively, we bent down. In that picture, you could see the wall. We bent down, but below the wall, just because we didn't know what it was. It just immediately kind of dropped down like that and then tried to peek over to see what was going on.
Tell the jurors why you bent down. Why did you think that might help?
Well, just because it was so loud, it sounded like something was coming at us. Like, we didn't know what it was, neither one of us. And then he just ran into the room, and I kind of stayed by the wall for a little bit, and then...
Did you ever think that these were shots coming from inside the 1200 building?
When I was outside, I didn't know what it was.
Give me a moment. Right. I thank you. By the way, you're no longer teaching at the school, correct?
No.
How come?
I wasn't able to.
Yeah, that's his name.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Okay, cross-examination, please.
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon, Ms. Campbell.
Hi.
I attempted to speak a little bit quickly. Can you maybe slow down? Just please let me know, okay?
Okay.
Before February 14th, 2018, you had never heard gunshots before, had you?
No.
Now, when you went outside the classroom to find Xavier, from the time that you left your classroom to the time that you went back in, how long would you estimate that was?
It wasn't a lot of time.
Do you think it was more than a minute, less than a minute?
Maybe a minute or two. Because it wasn't just out and back in. We were out there for a little bit trying to figure out what was going on.
Okay, so from the time that you left your classroom to the time that you bent down, how long, and you can estimate this for me, how long would you say that was?
Within a minute, I guess.
So if that's within a minute and you think you were outside maybe a minute to 2 minutes, how long were you actually bent down peeking over the ledge? You can ballpark it for me. I'm not going to hold you to the exact second.
30 seconds, 40 seconds. Because the noise was happening while that was going on. So.
And it, these loud, I'm sorry, as you described it, Mr. Hargulash, very loud noises.
Yeah.
It was so loud that you thought something was actually hitting your building, Building 700.
Yeah, and then we weren't sure what was going on. It sounded like something was hitting it, or like a building was collapsing, or something huge. It was just dreadfully loud, and you could tell it was just not, something was wrong. It was very wrong.
And you could tell, even having never heard gunshots before, you knew something was wrong. Maybe that it wasn't gunshots, but something was wrong. Is that
yes.
Correct? Now, when you peeked over the ledge, what did you see?
Well, I mean, when you look over the ledge, you could just see straight at the 1200 building.
And did you notice anything specific in the 1200 building or around the 1200 building?
Well, yeah, I could see, like, my head was focusing where the noise was all coming from, I guess, so it caught my eye that I could see into the bottom, like the very bottom window in that first classroom.
So you said that the sound drew your attention, so you could tell generally it was coming from north of you, around the 1200 building.
I just knew it wasn't like at my building, because like I could see everything right around me, so I knew it had to be out there, so I just started looking around. Yeah.
And eventually something in the 1200 building caught your attention.
Yeah, you could see.
What could you see? Could you explain to the jury what you saw?
You could see in the window. It was almost surreal. It was like while the pops were happening, you could see like smoke billowing there.
And what do you mean by smoke billowing? Just if you like, explain what it looked like. I know it's a tough question, but just the best that you can, if you can explain to the jury.
Like puffing lightly out the window with the shots.
And with the puffing that you saw, was that?
And then I thought the building was collapsing. I thought that was going to happen.
Okay. With the puffing that you saw, was that corresponding to the sounds you were hearing of the shots or the loud noises you heard?
Yes.
Now, ultimately, a code red was called, correct?
Yes.
But even before that, when the fire alarm went off, you did not allow your students to go to leave your classroom, did you?
No, I was, well, that all happened right before the fire alarm. And when I saw that smoke, I started thinking that building's coming down, so I didn't let my kids go out at all. I made them all just stay in the classroom, and then there was a short amount of time before, after the fire alarm, and then somebody else came on screaming about the code red.
Do you recall, what do you mean somebody came on?
Somebody on the overhead, on the loudspeakers.
Okay. Did you recognize that voice as any assistant principal in particular?
I'm not sure. Oh.
So, if I understand correctly, while you were bending down, is that when the fire alarm goes off? If you recall.
The fire alarm went off, it was a little bit after. It was after I saw the smoke coming from that window, because the fire alarm went off, like, while I was starting to go back to my classroom anyway, and then I heard the fire alarm, and the kids started getting up, and I had another teacher in the room, and we all kept everybody just in the room. Nobody went out.
So the order, and I don't mean to be complicated here, I'm just trying to get the order down.
And then shortly thereafter was the code red.
Okay. So just rewinding just a little bit. You go outside to see Xavier, because you hear a loud noise, correct?
Yes.
You see Xavier, he comes over, and he says something to the effect that it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. Is that yes? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Then you hear more noises, so you and Xavier both bend down.
I don't know if Xavier did.
Okay.
I think I was telling him to get in the classroom,
okay.
So I don't remember exactly what he did.
Okay, so he ultimately ran back to the classroom.
Yeah, and I was in, like, here's the door. I was in front of the door, and he came down this way and went in, and I stayed there for a little bit by that wall
before
I went in.
And that's when you're bent down, peeking over. Fire alarm goes off. You then go to the classroom and tell everybody to stay inside.
Yes.
Did you do that to protect your students because something was going on?
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that if the building was coming down, there was no way I was going to let them go out. But we were in there a long time. We knew everything by the time we left.
And did you mean students or yourself were receiving texts or other messages about what was going on?
Yes.
When you were back in your classroom, after you got back in, you could still hear loud noises, correct?
It was intermittent, yeah. It would start and then stop, and then start and then stop.
Could you tell it was the same type of sounds that you had heard when you were outside?
Yeah, I mean, we weren't sure, like, because we were starting to figure out what was going on, but then we were all just trying to figure out, like, what? How come it's still happening? Like, why isn't it stopping? What's going on? We didn't know.
Very briefly, Ms. Hamm. The puff of smoke that you saw, that was before the fire alarm went off, correct?
Yes.
So you never saw my client on the scene, correct?
No.
And after the fire alarm went off, did you get a chance to go back out and look at anything, or you were in your classroom?
Not until SWAT came to get us.
Okay. And did you ever figure out, like, how it is that you couldn't wrap your head around the sound coming from inside the 1200 building? Did you ever think about that?
It was just so loud and echoey, like, everywhere. We just knew, you could tell it wasn't literally at the building, but you couldn't tell where it was just because it was so loud.
Okay, you mentioned echoey.
It would bounce, I guess, the sound bounced off the buildings because it makes a triangle, like a rectangular shape of buildings right there. So I guess that's what's happening. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kim. I wish you the very best.
Based on any of that, any recross?
Yes, just very
good. Go ahead, please.
Ms. Campbell, you described it as echoey, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. You still looked at the 1200 building at the windows, though, the direction of where?
Yeah, I looked over the ledge, definitely.
And it drew your attention to the windows with the building spoke. So even with all this echo, you could kind of tell the vicinity of where the shots were coming. Where the noise was coming from.
Yeah, at that time I didn't know what it was, so I just looked over and then movement caught my eye, so.
And that corresponded with what you heard?
Yes.
Okay, Brother Hunter.
Ms. Drybush is witness excused.
Yes, sir.
And you may step down. Thank you very much. While she's doing that, defense, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Defense calls Tyler Jarboa.
Sir, if I could have you come all the way up here to the witness stand, please. Once you reach it, before you have a seat, you can just stop and look at me. Raise your right hand. You swear to tell the truth, all the truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please be seated. And once you're seated, if I could just keep that chair all the way up as far as it will go. Can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
My name is Tyler Jarboa, TYLERJARBOE.
Mr. Igarsh, you may inquire.
Thank you. Mr. Jarboa, would you prefer that I call you Tyler or Mr. Jarboa?
Tyler is fine.
Okay, fair enough. Are you in school right now?
I just graduated in May.
And where did you graduate from?
Florida Polytechnic University.
And what did you study?
Computer science and AI.
Okay. And were you a student at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas ever?
I was.
Were you a student back on February 14, 2018?
Yes, I was a junior.
And what class were you in when something unusual happened that day?
I was in Mr. Sanders' pre-calculus class.
And where is his class located?
It is in the building across from the 1200 building. I believe that is the 700 building.
Okay. Can I show you a photograph and see if you're able? And I'm not sure if your classroom's here, but if you could just take a look at this. And I'm showing you what has been marked as Defense Exhibit E. Are you able to see at least approximately where your classroom would be located?
It's not on this picture. It would be on the other side of the building. That's all the way on
okay,
the right side.
That's further down here?
Well, it's on the side facing the courtyard. It's okay. Not on the side facing the building.
Got it. And is that, do you know, if the football field is on the west side, do you remember where the football field is located?
Yes.
Is your classroom closer to the west side?
It's closer to the east side.
Closer to the east side of the 1200 building, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And were you on the first or second floor?
The second floor.
Now, before the fire alarm went off, do you remember what you were doing?
We were taking an exam, a quiz. We were taking some exam for that class.
And then did you hear the fire alarm go off?
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
So after the fire alarm went off, we did what we normally do for fire alarms and go out the door to the left and then go to the stairwell that's on the east side.
And that stairwell, would that have been closest to the east or to the west?
To the east.
Okay. And what happened next?
So after we went over to the stairwell to the east, there was two gentlemen that walked up the stairs and was telling us that it wasn't a drill. But none of us knew what was happening. The teachers at the time were telling us to go back down the stairs for our normal fire drills. And that's when I looked over the edge and saw Scott Peterson.
How close were you to Scott Peterson?
I was right above him, probably no more than 5 to 10 feet.
Okay, and what do you see him doing?
He was just sitting there against the stairwell, unholstering his weapon.
Okay,
you saw him? I'm sorry?
He was just unholstering his weapon.
Thank you.
Okay. Had you heard any shots up to that point?
No, we have not heard anything.
All right. What happened next?
So after that, me and my teacher, after we looked over the edge, we then started to walk back to the classroom. He was ushering everybody.
I forgot to ask you one question. You see him unholstering his weapon. Do you see him looking in any particular direction?
He was looking towards the west side, which I believe is where the football field is.
Okay,
he was
so looking down in that direction, correct?
Yes.
All right, and what happened next?
After we looked over the edge, we then were walking. Our teacher at the time told us to walk back to the classroom, and that's when we started to head back.
And then what happened?
As soon as we rounded the corner is when we heard about 3 to 4 shots.
And what did those sound like?
They sounded a lot like firecrackers. We didn't know what it was at the time, but it was just loud pops. And that's when, you know, that's as we were going back to the classroom.
And how many did you hear about?
About 3 to 4.
Okay. And then what happened?
Then we just went back to the classroom and then hid in the corner.
Let me go back to when you hear those pops. Mm-hmm. Okay. How close would you estimate at that point you are to Scott Peterson?
I don't know the exact distance, but it's around 30 to 40 feet.
Okay. And when you heard those shots, where did you think that they were coming from?
So the stairwell that's on the west side of the 700 building, that's where it generally sounded it was coming from.
Okay.
But
so did you ever think that they were contained within a particular building?
No, I just knew the direction that it was coming from.
Okay. Did you ever say, gosh, there are shots being fired inside of the 1200 building?
No, I just knew that it was coming from the west side stairwell.
And you thought it was the west side stairwell of the 700 building, correct?
I just knew it was coming from that direction. I didn't know where it was.
You've learned in retrospect that the shots were actually inside of the 1200 building, correct?
Yes.
Did you ever think back and wonder why it is that you thought that the shots were coming from west and outside?
I have not just thought about why it was coming from that side.
Have you ever had experience with echoes in that area?
It does echo quite a bit.
Explain for the jurors your experience about that.
It is a hallway outside. There's a lot of concrete that's around buildings. The walls are flat. Someone can drop a textbook, and it will echo throughout. You can hear it pretty clearly throughout the hallway.
So before the shooting, you had experienced times where loud noise will take place, and then you don't know where the noise is coming from, correct?
You know the direction where it's coming from, but you can't pinpoint its exact location.
Okay. I wish you the very best.
Thank you.
Cross-examination, go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. Tyler, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, how are you?
Not too bad. As I tell every witness, I speak pretty quickly. If you need me to slow down, just let me know, okay?
Okay.
Now, I want to show you a picture here on the paper.
Sure.
Screens up?
Yes. And we'll look annotator, Your Honor.
Sure.
Tyler, that screen is actually going to be interactive, so you can actually draw on it and circle things.
Okay.
Sir, do you see 3 little bars at the bottom of your screen?
Yes.
Just touch those?
Okay.
Tyler, do you recognize this aerial view?
Yes.
Can you just mark with a pencil on just where the 700 building is?
I think the pencil's on, right? So the 700 building would be this building right here.
Okay. Now, your class was on the south side, so facing kind of the courtyard.
Yes.
With the, I've changed it. Oh, can you just mark with a circle where the courtyard is?
The courtyard is right here.
Okay. Now, where approximately was your classroom?
It was about right here-ish.
Okay. So when you leave that classroom, and if you want to maybe change it to a green or purple, just for clarification, it's easier. When you left the classroom on the fire drill, what route did you take?
So as we came out the classroom, we walked up here into the stairwell that's right there.
Now this stairwell right here, when you said that you looked over the edge, were you looking north over the ledge, or is it east or west? What direction were you looking over the edge?
Just north over the ledge.
Okay. So if you continue with that purple line up to kind of where that white part is, that's where the ledge is that you were looking over?
Yes.
Okay. And if you could, can you just mark with an X approximately where you saw Mr. Peterson?
I saw him right around here-ish.
Okay. And you said you saw him unholstering his gun?
Yeah, he was on the wall.
He was on the wall. Did you see him actually taking that out of the holster, or did he already have it in his hands?
It was very quickly that I looked over.
Okay, so that's actually my next question. For how long would you say you saw him? You can estimate this.
Probably no more than a second to a couple seconds.
Now, you said that he was facing, it looked like he was facing west towards the football field, right?
Yes.
Was his body facing west, or was it just his head?
I don't really remember.
Okay. And I know you just testified it was only a second, so if you don't know the answer to this, that's fine. But did it look like he was scanning, or did it look like he was intent, like, focused on the west side?
I just saw him looking to the west side.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you're walking back, so basically just tracking back on the purple line that you already drew. You heard 3 to 4 shots.
Yes.
Had you ever heard a gunshot before in your life, in real life?
No.
And at that point in time, you were about 30 or 40 feet from Mr. Peterson?
About.
Can you just change it to green for me? And once again, mark approximately where you were when you heard the shot.
I was about here-ish when I started to hear the shots.
So right at the corner?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you stated on direct examination by Mr. Ardbush that you knew the direction that it was coming from. Mm-hmm. Which direction was that?
It was coming from the west side stairwell. Do you want me to mark it on the...
Yeah, sure.
So it was about, I believe the stairwell is right here, so it sounded like it was coming from that direction.
And where, and I'm going to zoom out a little bit, so I'm just going to erase this. Oh, you have to actually erase it. I don't have control. You know what, don't worry for a second. I'm just going to zoom out. On this one, actually, I'm going to show you, and for records, this is 17. I'm going to show you states 1.
The senior lot is at the north side.
You can mark it.
Okay, so the senior lot is here. It's that entire parking lot.
Did you at any time think the shots were coming from that direction, the senior lot?
I just knew it was coming from that area. I didn't know where it was. So in that direction, yes, but not. I didn't know if it was in the senior lot or not.
Okay. So you earlier you marked, and you can just mark again if you will, the west stairwell on the 700 building.
So the west stairwell is here.
Okay. So it could have been from the west stairwell, but it also could have been from the senior lot.
Yeah.
Senior lot is north of you?
Yes.
And the building between you and the senior lot is the 1200 building?
Yes.
You mentioned on direct examination about that echoes in the hallway. It was kind of like a known thing. And if someone dropped a textbook, you would kind of hear the echoes. Mm-hmm. Is that a yes? I'm sorry, yes.
Oh, sorry, yes.
So it was widely known that hallways weren't necessarily the best place to stand if you're trying to determine where a sound came from, were they?
Yeah.
They would not be the best place.
They wouldn't be the best place, yes.
Any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Is the witness excused?
He is.
All right, sir, you may step down. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
While he's doing that, defense, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. We call Jeffrey Morford. Jeffrey Morford.
If I could have you come all the way here to the witness stand, please. Once you reach it, before you have a seat, you can just stop and look at me. You swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please be seated. So once you're seated, if I could just scoot that chair all the way forward as far as it will go.
Okay.
Can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Jeffrey Morford, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, M-O-R-F-O-R-D.
Mr. Agar, your name, please.
Thank you. Mr. Morford, are you currently working?
No, sir, I'm retired.
And what are you retired from?
I was assistant principal at Stoneman Douglas.
And how long were you in the school system?
I was in Broward Schools 21 years, I believe, overall 33 years in public school.
And did you ever work for Marjorie Stoneman Douglas?
For 6 years.
6 years? And during that time, did you ever have contact with Scott Peterson?
I did.
Tell the jurors what type of interaction you had with him.
I would interact with him daily. He would help me anytime I had issues with parents, students, anything in that nature. We even shared duties together, like lunchtime and things like that. So I spent a lot of time with him.
Your title was assistant principal, correct?
Yes, sir.
And what was his relationship like with the kids?
He had a good relationship. I felt like that we were able to stop some things from happening because kids had confidence to come and talk to him, to share things with him. And he had a good rapport with, I believe, administration, staff, and students.
Were there times where there were any fights on campus?
We had a few.
And did you ever see Scott Peterson get involved and try to stop those fights?
He would always jump in and help, always.
Were there times he would do that even without backup?
Correct.
Did you ever see any acts at all that would lead you to believe he was a coward in any way?
No objections to any of your work?
No, that's overruled, and he already answered the question. Go ahead, sir, ask your next question.
Sorry.
And if there were arrests that needed to be made at school, would you call upon Scott to investigate and make those arrests if necessary?
Correct.
On the day in question, do you recall the fire alarm going off?
I do.
And tell us what happened.
I remember I was in my office.
Where was that?
I was in the 100 building.
Okay.
And I went to the Deputy Peterson's office. The fire alarm was in there, and someone was already in there working with it. So I remember I came back to my office, and eventually I went outside to start, you know, helping with getting kids, you know, with the fire alarm.
When you went into his office, was he in his office at that point?
I don't recall that. I don't recall that.
Okay. And then what happened next? What did you do?
Then I eventually went out to the hallway and started, you know, getting kids. My area to take care of was right there by the main 100 building in the auditorium. So I went that way. I eventually ended up down toward the auditorium area, headed toward the 1200 building. I didn't get near that far down, but in that direction. And I eventually ran into Office Monitor Stobley, who informed me what was going on. And so I headed back to try to start, you know, because kids were all coming down for the fire, thinking it was a fire drill. And so we had to, we were trying to get them in the auditorium and get them back up the stairs to back to their classrooms.
Were you equipped with a school radio?
Yes, sir.
Do you know approximately how many people had a school radio?
A lot.
A lot. I mean, not just administrators, people like custodians. Right?
Correct. All campus monitors, custodians, even some department heads. So there was a lot of radios on campus.
Okay. Do you always hear every transmission over the school radio?
No.
Tell the jurors how come you don't always hear every single transmission that's made over a school radio.
People can walk on top of each other. These weren't like real high-tech radios. So, for instance, maybe if I was talking and someone pushed a button, they wouldn't even have to be talking. They could just push the button and it would cancel out, you know, what I was saying. It's just a lot of different things could keep them from being where you hear everything.
Did you ever miss any transmissions during your 6 years, for example, at that school when you have divided attention, like you're talking to someone or you're researching on your computer, anything like
that? Most definitely, especially if, like, I would have someone in my office, if I had a parent or a student, I would a lot of times turn my radio down. Just, I would, you know, not off, but down, and so you could definitely miss things.
What is a code red?
Immediate danger, lockdown. You need to get to safety.
When someone orders a code red, whose benefit are they doing it for?
Staff, students.
And what are teachers instructed to do when a code red is ordered?
They're to secure their room and secure their kids in the room.
That's if they can get into their room.
Correct.
So let's talk about when there's a fire alarm going off. Are teachers supposed to bring their keys outside of their classrooms?
They should, yes. They should secure their classroom when they're leaving for the fire drill. They should take their appropriate things with them and secure their door and then be able to let the kids back in when they're finished.
Did there come a time where you heard someone order a code red on February 14, 2018?
Yes, I heard Deputy Peterson call code red.
Okay. And are you familiar with his voice?
I spoke with him daily.
How often, just so that they're clear? In the 6 years you were there, did you speak to him every day?
Daily. I'm sorry.
Are there times
daily.
Did you speak to him more than once a day?
Most definitely.
Do you recognize his voice?
Most definitely.
When you heard him order a code red, was there any doubt in your mind he's the one who did so?
No doubt in my mind.
Now, as a result of him ordering a code red, did you do anything over the radio?
I... that's where and I apologize. Some of my dealing with all this, I've had some issues, and memory's been one of them. But I don't specifically remember calling Code Red, but I know another assistant principal in his statement said he heard me call Code Red. So I don't, in the chaos of what happening, I don't remember it myself, but another person did in his statement say that he heard me call it.
If you did order that Code Red, would it have been because my client ordered the Code Red?
100%, because I heard it from him first.
Was there a time that you went to the video room to review surveillance video?
Correct. After, like I said, I met Coach Stobley, and we were going back, and Deputy Peterson got on the radio and asked me to go to the camera room to try to locate what was going on.
Do you remember him telling you specifically to go to the camera room to try to locate the shooters?
Correct.
And would you have gone to the video room had he not told you that?
No, I probably would not have thought of that. I would just been trying to get kids in to safety.
And who did you go to the video room with?
Mr. Greenleaf, our security specialist.
And between you and him, who knows how to operate the equipment in the video room?
He does. I did not know how to operate it.
And while he was on the equipment, what were you doing?
I was on the radio. I was sitting beside him. He was like in an area like this where the computer screen was, and I was sitting like beside him.
And were you speaking with anyone on your school radio?
Deputy Peterson.
And how long did this go on, if you can give an estimate, just ballpark?
It wasn't like very briefly. We had to rewind the film, and then when we first rewound the film, it was like just smoky, we couldn't really see much, and so we started back. And then I was on, as we saw things, we were reporting it to him. So it wasn't like 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes at least at that.
At least. You can't give it a total ballpark.
I can.
At least 5 to 10 minutes.
Correct. I was on with him at least 5 to 10 minutes for sure.
Okay. But that's not your ballpark, right?
No, right.
You're saying that would be the minimum?
Correct.
Are you able to give like a maximum time?
I don't know. Everything was happening so fast, I don't know.
Was there ever a time during that, again, you called it a long process, right? Is that a yes?
Yes.
Was there ever a time that Deputy Peterson ever hung up or gave up on the process?
No, never.
Did it seem like he was trying to find out in real time where the shooter or shooters were located?
Yes.
That was your purpose with him?
Correct.
Did my client have any control over the video and where it was being rewound to?
No.
If you did learn at some point that Mr. Greenleaf didn't rewind it properly, and so you weren't actually giving the right information, correct?
We knew it was delayed, correct. It was not live.
But whatever information that Greenleaf was giving you, you were conveying that to my client, correct?
Correct.
Did you understand that he was then disseminating that information to those on the scene?
That Deputy Peterson was?
Yes.
We assumed he was, yes.
Okay. That's all I have. I thank you for coming in, sir.
Cross-examination, go ahead.
Thank you.
Hello, Ms. Morford. How are you doing?
Hello.
I tend to speak pretty quickly. If you need me to slow down, please just let me know. You're friends with Scott Peterson, right?
Yes, I am.
You still socialize with him?
No.
No?
No.
But you would categorize yourself as a friend?
When we were in school together, I would definitely consider him a friend.
Now, Deputy Peterson, your testimony has ordered or told you to go to the camera room, correct?
Correct.
And you're with Kelvin Greenleaf?
I wasn't with him at the time. I headed there, and I don't recall exactly where I ran into Kelvin, but somewhere we ran into each other, and we went into the main building.
And you said on direct that you have some memory issues related to this incident, correct?
Correct.
Is that because of the trauma associated with it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you remember some things, you don't remember other things.
Correct. Okay. That's why I tried to go back and look at some of my statements so I can remember things, because I have a lot of depositions.
Do you remember Mr. Peterson telling you over the, when you're in the video room to look directly or to look at the 1200 building?
I don't recall that.
Is it possible he told you that?
I don't recall it. Again, Mr. Greenleaf was the one that went in and got on the camera and got it going. I was there watching.
You were there watching and then relaying the information?
Correct.
Now, you took part in Code Red drills, correct?
Correct.
The classes taught by school board employee?
Correct.
And Mr. Peterson was part of that?
I don't know.
You don't know if he was part of it?
Because we would have it in the auditorium. It would be big. Sometimes, because of things we'd have going on, we, as an administrator, I would be in and out of the meetings. I couldn't maybe sit there the whole time. So I honestly couldn't tell who was there, who was not there.
Typically with these meetings, though, the SRO, the head of the security on campus, would be there, right? You don't remember?
I don't know that.
Now, you testified on direct that Deputy Peterson called the Code Red.
Correct.
Isn't it true that Elliot Bonner is the first person to call Code Red?
I never heard Coach Bonner call Code Red.
And today you're stating that it was definitely Deputy Peterson that called it Code Red.
Correct.
Organizing my notes here. Have you ever testified differently?
Not that. I tried to go back and look at all my depositions. So not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of. Would it be anything that might refresh your recollection?
Possibly.
You remember giving a sworn statement on August 22nd of 2018 to a Detective Bonasaro?
No, I don't remember.
Might something refresh your recollection?
Please.
Sure. So the point of the exercise is just read whatever the document the lawyer wants you to read. Read it to yourself, take your time. When you're done, if you look up, I'm sure the attorneys will have questions for you. What I don't want you to do is read out loud from the document. Just read it to yourself to see if that refreshes your memory, okay?
Saying that I don't remember.
You don't remember who called Code Red back on August 22nd, 2018. I'll show you the date.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so this happened in February 14th of 2018.
Right.
So it's approximately 6 months later, and you don't remember who called it.
Okay.
But today, as we're in a courtroom, on June 21st, 2023, suddenly Mr. Peterson called the code red.
Correct. Well, again, I tried to go back and look at all my depositions, and I know in several of my depositions I said that Deputy Peterson called code red. And that's, because of memory, I'm trying to go back and look at what I said, because the farther back to that date would have been, I believe, I would remember.
Would you agree that you would remember closer to the date that it happened than today?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. And the other depositions, you recall when they happened? Approximately, I'm not going to hold you to the date.
I mean, I had 1-2 days after the incident. I've had a lot.
Including up to April 26th of 2022?
Correct.
Now, you also called a code red, correct?
I don't remember, but another assistant principal said he heard me call it.
Now, with the school radio, as Mr. Eichler was asking, sometimes you heard transmission, sometimes you would turn it down if you were in a parent meeting. Did you overhear Coach Feist that day?
No, I did not.
Did you overhear campus monitor Medina that day?
I don't remember that.
Now, you stated under direct that the fire alarm was in Mr. Peterson's office. What is that?
That's where we would turn it off.
So, the master switchboard is...
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And that's because he's the SRO, the head of the security.
I mean, I don't know why. It's just that's where it was.
Now, you described on direct examination that he had a good relationship with the kids. He was like a mentor to them?
I think so.
You saw it. It was a different relationship. It was almost like a relationship that a student may have with a teacher or an administrator.
Correct.
Now, you testified on direct that you headed towards the auditorium area. Why did you do that?
That's where my duty is for fire drill.
Okay. Now, as you headed towards the auditorium area from building one, that's heading north, kind of towards the 1200.
Correct.
You ran into Brian Staub, who was a campus monitor, and he told you what was going on.
Correct.
Did you hear any shots that day?
Again, I don't recall that at all.
Now, you said that you were trying to get the kids back in the classroom. Is that correct?
After I saw Coach Staub, correct.
And is that to try to protect the kids?
Correct.
Now, in code red drills, what is an assistant principal's job?
Our job is to seek shelter and...
For just you?
For everyone.
So you did your job that day by trying to get the kids in to protect them?
Was trying to, correct.
Trying to. Now, on direct examination, the question was asked about Mr. Green leaving the video and that Mr. Green incorrectly did the video. That's not what happened, though, right?
I don't know what you mean by incorrectly.
Well, that was the question that was asked. Did Kelvin Green do it incorrectly?
Okay, no, I'm saying that it wasn't live. We had to rewind it.
So Mr. Green did it properly, he just couldn't see what was on the screen. Could you see what was on the screen? Because you were watching videos, right?
Correct. Not at the beginning, as I thought I stated, it was just all cloudy.
So it had to be rewound.
Correct.
To see what happened.
Correct.
Do you recall telling Mr. Peterson that the video may be delayed?
I don't recall that.
You don't recall that. Mr. Morford, is it kind of safe to say you don't remember a lot about February 14th, 2018?
I've tried to forget a lot.
Understood. I understand.
People don't realize what we went through that
day. So as you're asked questions today, you're basing a lot of it off the transcripts, the depositions, things of that nature.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a good independent recollection of what actually happened, separate from the statements that you read?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
If you think about February 14th, 2018, can you remember in your brain, in your mind, what happened? Or is it just based upon what you're reading, the sworn statements you previously gave?
I think it's a combination of both.
He's doing that, ladies and gentlemen. A little quick restroom break. Same admonition as always. Please do not discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony until we reach the end of the case. I'll tell you when that is. If you leave the notepads in your chairs and step in the back one moment, I'll be right back with you. Thank you.
That wraps up segment number 3 in our coverage in the trial of Scott Peterson. There is more to come. I'm Tony Bruschi. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.